Winter can be a sleepy time for gardeners, but it's a great time to get some work done on the trees in your landscape. This hour, Tree Pruning 101. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Jeff Iles, Iowa State University professor and chair of the Horticulture Department, will walk us through the ABCs of tree pruning. Identifying problems, making a plan, making the right cuts, and doing it at the right time. ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Geron will also be here. He and Jeff will answer your questions about the plants and trees in your life. Give us a call, 866-780-9100, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Geron and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh will join us in a few minutes to answer your questions. But we're going to start the hour by taking a good hard look at the trees in your landscape with Jeff Iles, Iowa State University professor and chair of the Horticulture Department. Hello, Jeff.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, what's up with Vitosh joining us? I wasn't aware of this.
It was on the calendar.
I might just walk out.
All right. A little bit of a tree controversy, I guess. Well, he said you get to have your say, Jeff. You good with that?
He always has the last word, though.
All right. We didn't expect this to be a political debate this hour, but I'll make sure you have equal time.
Okay.
All right. Jeff, let's start with, I mean, this is a great time of year to take a look at your trees and start thinking about what you might want to do. What should we be looking for?
Right. Well, first off, it is a good time of the year to start looking, to start making plans. But you know what? The calendar isn't in our favor if we want to start doing a lot of work. Let's look at tree response, tree physiology. We do know that trees respond better to wounding, and of course pruning is a wound, when it's done in the late dormant season, even during the summer. Now, we'll get back to that in just a minute. There are some trees we don't want to touch in the summer, but this is not really the ideal time of the year to be pruning anything. However, we can go out and take stock of the woody plants in our yards and landscapes and make some decisions and make some plans for what we might do in February and March or later on in the summer.
Well, and it becomes an ideal time to do that because as the leaves fall, you can really see the structure of the tree, right?
Right, and some things are revealed at this time of the year that were hidden by the foliage. So, you know, we've had some strange weather this year. We have strange weather every year. But strong winds can take their toll on large trees. So maybe when the leaves are gone, we can see some structural deformities or damage that was heretofore hidden by the foliage. So, yeah, get out and take a look at the trees, especially the big ones, and especially those big ones that are near our homes and near playground areas. So those are the ones that I really focus in on. So good time of the year to take stock.
How about with young trees as well? As we want to shape them as they grow, is this a good time to think about, okay, what should I be doing?
It is, because hopefully, and we've had a really pretty good growing season, and hopefully your trees have put on a lot of growth. And pruning, as we will discuss, is not something you do every once in a while. I'm a firm believer in an annual cycle and maybe hitting the trees or addressing the trees a couple of times during the growing season or during the year. So, yes, look at plants, especially the new ones. Have they developed multiple leaders? Do they have branches that could become a problem later on in their lives? So, and really, maybe that's what we should focus on here this morning, because large tree pruning should be left to the professionals. I don't want to advocate for people getting up in trees where they're not trained or where it might be a dangerous situation. And we're very fortunate in the state of Iowa. We have a great professional organization, the Iowa Arborist Association, which will soon become a chapter of the International Society of Arboriculture. We have a lot of great tree care professionals in the state. So let's leave the heavy work to those folks. And we'll concentrate on the young trees.
Well, and let's just underline that before we move on, because you're not just trying to drum up business for arborists.
No.
I mean, there is real danger there. Those branches are not called widow makers for nothing, right?
Right. Well, this, you know, tree care work is some of the most dangerous work out there. It ranks right up there with farming. And you're right. Trees are big, heavy things. They're unpredictable. Chainsaws, when used inappropriately, can be very dangerous.
Halloween proves that every year.
I mean, is there a more dangerous thing than getting up at a tree with a chainsaw if you're not prepared? Perhaps putting a hockey stick in the hands of a 14-year-old is equally dangerous, but you know what I mean. So yeah, let's leave the big heavy trees to the professionals.
All right, so let's talk more about those young trees and looking at the structure. I mean, a lot of us don't really know what we're looking for. So where do we turn for guidance?
Well, let's start with an easy example. Let's look at our friends, the conifers, the evergreens. And you know, if you put a conifer in the right position in your yard, you shouldn't have to do a whole lot of pruning. What I do look for on young evergreens is the development of a central leader. If I have a spruce or a pine that has thrown two or three central leaders or leaders at the top of the tree, I'm going to narrow that down to one. That's pretty easily done, and then you walk away. Older conifers, you might begin to remove some lower branches, but I'm a big fan of getting the right tree in the right site, and if we do that with conifers, then we really don't have a lot of pruning to be done. Ornamental trees, things like crabapples or Japanese tree lilacs, I'm not going to try to force them to do something that they don't want to do. I usually try to work with the plant's growth habit, its genetic tendencies, and simply try to make sure my branches are spaced. So if I have a crabapple with a lot of rubbing or crossing branches, I'm going to alleviate those when the tree is young. But it's hard to form a central leader on a tree that doesn't want to do that. And so I'm going to work with what it wants to give me. I think a lot of our discussion this morning and a lot of discussion that I have with my students is forming good shade trees. The deciduous shade trees like the oaks, the maples, the used to be the ash, the elms, all of those trees are long-lived, we hope, and get big. And we want to get them off to a good start.
All right. And I know, of course, Iowa State University Extension has some great publications that we can turn to. Pictures are helpful, right?
Oh, pictures. I'm a visual learner, so a lot of those publications give you at least some example of what we're looking for. And really the first thing I look at is that central leader. I don't care how old the tree is, whether it's just been put in the ground or been there for 5 or 10 years, for the most part. Even those trees that tend to splay out or develop a decurrent growth habit, multiple stems later on in their lives, I still try to develop a central leader on them when they're young. You know, when the tree becomes larger and older and I can't get to that central leader anymore, then the tree's on its own. But central leader development is extremely important. And then good branch spacing around that central axis. I like to have my branches alternate up and down the stem. I don't like to see a cluster of branches anywhere on the tree because that could be a weak point. And maybe most importantly, and this is a tough lesson for a lot of folks, is I don't want to limb the tree up prematurely. So when you see a young tree in the landscape, I'd like to see some lower branches. In fact, when I look at a young tree, I'd like to see 2/3 of that tree in branches. And there's good reason for that. It's been proven by demonstrations forever. Those lower branches help feed, if you will, the lower part of the plant. So the lower branches help develop good stem diameter, stem taper development. They help develop a good root system. And certainly, an old or a large growing tree like an oak will eventually have to have its lower limbs removed, but it's done gradually over time and not all at once.
And even if it makes mowing more challenging,
right,
it's a good idea to leave those branches in place.
Well, and you can shorten them. I mean, those lower branches, keep in mind, are temporary. So it really doesn't matter what they look like. As long as they have leaves, they're providing carbohydrates for the tree. We can shorten them up to keep them out of our way, or we can enlarge the mulch circle around the base of the plant and alleviate mowing difficulties there.
How about tools when you're ready to make the cut? I mean, if you don't have the right tools, then you can really damage the tree, right?
Right. And if we're focusing on small trees, really your arsenal of tools doesn't have to be all that big. I mean, I like a nice pair of hand shears, hand pruners, with a bypass blade system, and there's all kinds of good models in the trade. A good pair of hand shears is essential, and then a good pruning saw. And I like those that have these handles and blades that kind of fold into one another, and so I don't injure myself when I put it in my back pocket. And a lot of these newer saws cut on both the push and pull stroke, and it's really cool. It's really a lot of fun to saw off a branch appropriately. So at the right time of the year, So, you know, and you might find some, you might find a pole pruner that you like to get up into the tree canopy, but, you don't need a lot of stuff. And, you know, I mentioned chainsaws just a minute ago. On young trees, I'm not sure we need chainsaws. Perhaps on older branches or larger branches, but again, our word of caution is to be careful getting too far off the ground with a chainsaw.
All right. And now you mentioned earlier that for many trees, the late dormant season
right.
is the right time. So would you suggest people just know what kind of tree they have and check?
Right, right. Well, and I can hear Vitaj hyperventilating in the background already here. But so oaks are the example, the tree that we have to be very careful about when we do prune it. And of course, we prune oak only during the dormant season. So you could start pruning on oaks in December, but I would prefer to wait until February, early March. But then we call a halt again. The insects that vector this disease called oak wilt begin to become active early on in our growing season. And so it is the specter of oak wilt that keeps us from pruning oak when they're growing and when those wounds that we create could attract the insects that vector this very damaging fungal disease. But late dormant season, I'm a big fan of that because the leaves haven't formed yet. You can see the plant's architecture. And so February and March are great times to prune. And we have also learned that summer pruning is also good. The leaves are in the way then, but trees respond very quickly to wounds made at that time of the year. The chemical defenses, the physical wood that they develop forms very quickly when the tree is actively growing.
All right. And in spite of the fact that you and others have been saying this on Horticulture Day for many, many years, let's talk about wounds and why most of the time you do not need to treat them.
Right. Well, the research is ongoing, and we're always looking for that magic bullet that will help the tree. We feel bad when we injure a tree with a lawnmower or have to remove a branch. We want to do something for the plant. And yet, as I sit here this morning, I can't think of a wound dressing that would speed the wound recovery process or the wound closure process, compartmentalization, if you will. Now, if for some reason you have to prune oak during the growing season, then one of these wound dressings might be appropriate to coat the wound face with to keep insects from gaining a foothold. But that might be the only reason I can think of that these wound dressings, wound paints would be of any value. Now, again, research is ongoing. The magic pill might be developed someday that helps the plant recover. But what I'd rather advocate for is pruning at the right time of the year, making small wounds that the tree can cope with, and getting your trees onto an annual cycle of pruning. That's far more beneficial than waiting for that magic paint that'll help us correct mistakes.
All right, and that annual pruning might prevent big bills with the arborist later on.
You bet.
At least in some cases.
Like going to the dentist.
Right. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with me, Jeff Iles, Iowa State University professor and chair of the Horticulture Department. Coming up in just a moment, Richard Geron and Mark Vitosh will be joining us. And you can join as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We've been talking about pruning trees so far this hour, but of course you are welcome to join the conversation with any questions about the plants or trees in your life. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Joining me now, Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
And in spite of what Jeff Iles was saying there, you were calm and collected throughout. Jeff, I think you met his very high standards.
Oh, boy. Well, I love Mark. Mark is like a brother to me. So
that's very nice, Jeff.
Right. The sibling squabbles are evidence of that as well. Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, is also here. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
You stay above the fray.
Yes, I do.
Appreciate that. All right. Let's get to the phones. 866-780-9100. Marty is on the line in Johnston. Hi, Marty.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, every year I have angst about pruning my Japanese maple. I have two, but the one I'm most concerned about is probably about 4 foot tall and red and very fine leaves. And sometimes droops over into the walkway that goes to the front of the front door. My concern is I never know exactly when to do it,
right,
or how extreme to be. And I, in the past, have really cut it back all the leaders or the fine branches that seem to be overtaking a particular branch, and it seems to get fuller and bushier all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid I'm overdoing it.
Well, first off, congratulations on successfully cultivating a Japanese maple. That is not the easiest of species to grow here in central Iowa. You must have a good location, and you've done a good job getting it going. Let's first address timing. I'm as we might have mentioned a few minutes ago, I'm a little reluctant to do a lot of pruning on almost anything this time of the year. So that late dormant season window works very well for trees like Japanese maple, and I would probably delay that until early to mid-March, because again, like we've just talked about, you can see the plant's architecture without the foliage getting in the way. Because the tree grows so slowly and can suffer some winter damage, I'm reluctant to prune it too heavily. But if this tree is infringing on sidewalk, then you can certainly remove branches or twigs or stems back to their point of origin. And I don't want to gloss over that. So when removing a branch, or a branchlet or whatever is infringing on the sidewalk or other things, take that branch, find where it originates, and prune it at that point. Don't make a pruning cut midway on any stem. And that way the plant looks more natural. But I it sounds like what you're doing is working. Now, the fear is that maybe the plant will grow too large for the site that it's been given. And then you have to do what you've been doing and try to rein it in every year. Yeah, it's a nice problem to have, but that might be something you have to keep doing. But as we talked about just a few minutes ago, try to work with the plant's architecture. This sounds like more of a weeping form of Japanese maple, very decorative. Try not to alter its growth habits. Simply remove offending branches back at their point of origin.
Could I ask another quick question?
Sure.
One of the reasons I'm concerned is that it, you know, is really heavily leafed, and I'm afraid that snow will weigh it down and break branches. Is there any fear of that? And because it is real flexible,
right?
But
so the leaves, what do you think about that? The leaves hang on through most of the winter.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. They dry to paper-like things, at which I strip off before I prune. So that I can see.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it would be papery brown all winter
sure.
if I let it.
You know, I hate to remove branches just to guard against some eventuality that might never happen. That's a contradiction. But so I would hate to reduce the plant's food-producing mechanism and food storage mechanism to guard against that. So I think what you're doing, thinning a tree, that concept always bothers me. I mean, you could thin it, but I'm not sure that's going to keep you out of harm's way. So I'm looking for removing branches that are crossing or rubbing or touching each other. But after that, I leave it alone. You know, the snow and ice thing, it's kind of like dairy farming. Whenever you have one of those episodes, you could go out and shake the snow and ice off before it hardens. But that's kind of dicey too. Remember, those buds that are on the plant right now are next year's growth. You don't want to do too much stripping or shaking that might damage next year's growing points.
I would just add one thing.
It's a beautiful little tree.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Go ahead.
I would just add one thing, Dr. Iles. She could target, if she had weak angle branches that were more narrow, if she was going to choose those over branches that are more lateral,
right?
Those branches are going to be stronger. So if you have branches that are weaker, more narrow connections, focus on those if you are going to remove some of those branches.
And of course, the final solution, Marty, is to send us some pictures. And sometimes what you're talking about doesn't always register in my feeble mind. So perhaps a picture might help me better understand this.
All right, Marty, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, Margaret on the line in Stanley. She's got an oak tree question, so we'll let Mark take this one.
Oh,
hi,
boy.
Margaret.
Oh, yeah.
All right, you guys, you've done a nice job. I kind of got the idea here, but I have let these trees grow for 13 years, and they're all the way, they droop all the way to the bottom of the, you know, they hit the ground. And that's fine, except other people are now helping me mow my lawn, and that's not so good. So if I want to trim that back, I like the look of the, you know, the sweeping limbs and stuff, but I'd like to trim them back just so I can get a lawnmower underneath my tree. But you're saying I got to take it back to the trunk, huh?
It kind of depends on the species, Margaret. If it's a pin oak,
pin oak.
Okay, they tend to really droop. And if you just do a reduction cut, like Dr. Iles talked about earlier, thing is the foliage will be underneath itself. And trees are very good that if that branch is not producing enough photosynthate, it'll actually shut down. So if you reduce the cut on those and don't go all the way back to the point of origin to what we call the branch collar, that branch is probably going to die on a pin oak anyway, so you're actually better to go all the way back. And the challenge with pin oaks is if you need 8-foot clearance on a pin oak, over time you're probably pruning up to about 16 feet, usually twice, because those branches tend to droop so much. So the thing is, Dr. Iles said, you don't want to take too much at any one time. So what you're probably going to want to do is maybe look at the bottom whorl of branches and get those removed this first year, and then look to see if you can take more. The other thing, as he mentioned, you don't want branches to get too big. So we tend to try to get those branches off before they're about 2 inches in diameter. So if you have a few branches that are maybe 1 inch and are lower, and you have a few that are close to 2 above that, I would actually take those first and then come back in a year or two and take the rest.
Okay. Second question, I have grapes, and last year I cut all the buds off, and I had no grapes. Now, this year I had tons of grapes, so I don't want to do that again. So how do I prune it back so I still have grapes next year?
Okay, basically you want to prune in late winter. I would do it sometime in March, and realize that they bear fruit on the previous year's growth. And there may be 200, maybe 250 buds capable of producing fruit. And so what you want to do is prune it back to maybe where there are maybe 40, 50 buds left that will produce fruit. We do have a publication, Growing Grapes in the Home Garden, that has a section on pruning, and it has some diagrams in there that might help you. But basically, you need to do some pruning and do that in March, early April.
All right. Margaret, thank you so much for your call. And you can join our conversation with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And here we have just a quick question about roses from Dave. Can I cut back my roses now? They still have blooms. And if so, what do I cut off and what do I leave?
Typically, I wait until early spring. Usually there's a certain amount of winter kill that develops over winter. And so I would go out like in early April, find the dead wood. The dead wood is going to be brown in color, the live wood green. So just simply cut out the dead wood.
All right. And how about, should he pile some soil around the rose bush?
Or? Well, if they're hybrid teas, floribundas, modern type roses, I would take some soil from the garden and basically cover the bottom 6, 7, 8 inches of the canes with soil. Soil is a very good insulator, and that should protect the bottom of the canes.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Donna's on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Donna.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I live in Prairie Hill community here in Iowa City, and we have a large detention pond that was put in to conserve the runoff. And it's got about a 6 or 7 foot block wall on the south edge. It's backed by gravel, and we'd like to plant some river birch along that wall if possible, but we were concerned about the roots getting into the wall or destroying it or causing problems. What is the recommendation on that?
No, so how
should we
close,
just forget about it?
How close could you plant river birch if you can plant them is what you're asking.
Right.
Okay. Jeff?
Well, first question, Donna, do you know anything about the soil chemistry in the area? Have you done a pH test?
No,
okay.
We haven't.
The only reason I bring that up first is that river birch are rather particular about soil pH. They don't like alkaline soils where the pH is really, really high. In your neck of the woods, your pHs tend to be a little more moderate than they might be over here. So that would be the first thing I would check is soil pH. And if it is high, then you might want to reconsider the use of a river birch that'll turn yellow on you on high pH soils. Secondly, I'm trying to envision this wall and potential damage that the river birch might do. I don't know if it's that big of a concern. I'm going to throw it at Vitosh and see what he says here. What do you think, Mark?
Okay.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah.
I mean, as always, if you can get 10 to 15 feet away from a wall directly, I think you would have less potential. You don't want to plant right next to the wall. Generally, we give trees a bad name for causing issues, but if you have a tree right next to a foundation or a wall and those roots don't have anywhere to go, and as they expand, they can put pressure on structure. So if you can get 10 to 15 feet away, I would also throw another option. I'm not sure quite what the goal of the group is, but there are some shrubs that are water loving, like silky dogwood, button bush, and a few others that you could look at if you just want to get some habitat or vegetation along that wall to create some beauty. So I think you have some alternatives to look at.
All right. Well, we had gotten these birches from the state forestry.
Oh.
For, I think, a quarter a piece, so we're just dying to put them in.
Sure. Wow.
Quarter a piece.
But
something like that.
Do you have room to give them some distance, maybe 15 feet or so? Do you have to plant them right next to the wall?
No. In fact, the ground tapers down past on the other side of the wall. So we could, we've got probably 20 feet there before we get to the
I would say if you have 20 feet, I would take it.
All right. Donna, thank you so much for your call. And next we will go to Deborah on the south side of Des Moines. Hi, Deborah.
Hi.
Hi.
I've got two Japanese cherries. You know, they're ornamental. They don't produce cherries.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what they are?
Yeah. So can you describe their growth habit? There's all kinds of these ornamental cherry trees. Are these more upright? Or are they weeping?
Well, they seem to be upright.
Okay. Yep.
And one, they've only been in there 2 years. I don't live there. I bought a piece of property and put a cabin on it in southern Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't got to move there yet. But these trees are on their second. This will be their second winter going in.
Okay.
And what are you concerned about with the trees, Deborah?
Well, one has a dead top on it.
Mm.
Where the rest of it looks great.
Yeah. Well, I'm only guessing here, but some members of that group of plants that we lump into the cherries and the plums, some of them aren't totally winter hardy for us in this part of the world. And so what you might be looking at there is winter damage, and when trees are young, that is probably more of a problem than it would be later on in their lives. But what caused it maybe is an academic argument. What you do about it is what you can do. And so really all you can do is remove the dead wood, and if the tree is really tall, then you might have to have someone do that for you. But pruning the dead wood out back to green wood or to good wood is perfectly acceptable. You could do that almost any time of the year. But what caused it? My guess, it just could be a bit of transplant shock or perhaps some winter damage.
Yeah, it's only about 6 foot tall.
Oh.
And the other one's about 6 foot tall, too. They're just,
yeah,
you know, they were just tiny little trees on
sure.
the bottom.
Now that's an easy fix.
And, good. And the other one is kind of splaying out. I can't figure out what I want to be the middle of the tree.
Yeah. Well, sometimes these ornamental cherries don't provide you a nice central leader. In fact, many times they'll kind of splay out and have a number of large scaffold branches, so there isn't one central leader. You know, and on a young tree like that, I'm going to go very, very easy on my pruning anyway. I don't want to over-prune a young tree. I might give that a little time to develop before I start making major pruning decisions. Look for those branches that are dead, of course, and those that might be crossing. But this might be a case where you stand back and watch it for a couple of years before you start doing a lot of major pruning work.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Deborah. Next up, Wendy in Coralville. Hi, Wendy.
Hello. How are you this morning?
Good. What's your question?
So this was the first year that I tried to grow cannas and elephant ears.
Okay.
And I put them in containers, and I've drug them inside my heated garage, so they're doing fine.
Mm-hmm.
is there a point that they die back and I have to cut off the dead stuff, or do I do that now, or what do I do with them?
I would drag them back outside and let
both of them.
Yep. And okay. Let the cold temperatures kill them.
Okay.
And then I would cut off the cannas, maybe 3 or 4 inches above the potting soil, take them out, kind of clean them up by hand, let them dry for a day or two, and then get a large box or open crate and put them in there. Don't cover them with anything. And then put them in a cool, dry place. And that's the key. The temperature should be around 40, 45, 50.
Okay.
As far as the elephant's ear, I do the same thing. Bring it outside, let a hard freeze kill it, cut off the dead foliage, and dig up that bulb-like structure in the ground. Let it dry for a day or two. And then you're going to bury this in a box, and you're going to bury it in either some sawdust or some peat moss. And then you're going to keep it at room temperature through the winter.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Wendy. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me today, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron, ISU Professor and Chair of the Horticulture Department Jeff Iles, and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. You can call us 866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. You're welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. With me, Jeff Iles, Iowa State University Professor and Chair of the Horticulture Department, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron is here, and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. And let's go back to the phones. Dean is on the line in Dubuque. Hi, Dean.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I have an ancient oak. It's 300 years old or older, they told me. And it's in decline, and it's become a financial burden, you know, trying to keep up with the decline. And I want to do that because I don't want to lose the tree. Recently, they told me I needed iron put into the trunk, 550. I've already got 1,000 into the tree, and I have one question. First of all, is I'd like to be able to talk to Professor Iles, so if I could have his phone number right now.
Okay. Well, at my office, it's area code 515-294-3718. Rings you into the main office, and they will get you to me.
All right. Thank you. Basically, my question is there any way I can get financial help for this ancient tree that saw Indians running around on the bluff here in Dubuque? I assume that the arborist is right in telling me it needs iron.
Well, first off, Dean, do you know what kind of an oak tree this is? I'm curious.
It's a white oak.
Beautiful. Yeah. And why are they recommending iron? Is the tree yellowing?
Well, he told me the leaves were showing that it needed iron.
Okay. Well,
and $550 pumped in.
Well, we're kind of operating at a disadvantage here this morning without seeing the plant, and I'm not going to contradict what a trained arborist told you on site. That's always a risky place to be, but boy, that's a very old oak tree for Iowa, and you've mentioned it's declining, and that word is kind of loaded. It means all kinds of things, and you also mentioned you want to save it. Really, the only thing you can do is remove dead tissue as it forms. Perhaps iron is recommended, perhaps not. That's a discussion we can have later on. But I'm most interested in making sure that tree is not a danger to you, your family, your property. And so if it is declining and if it's throwing dead wood or declining in the canopy, then that wood needs to come out. You want to control how the tree declines and how it ages. And, of course, we all have finite lifespans, and we never want to have to, consider an old venerable tree like this that has seen history. We never want to think about its demise, but it sounds like the tree is on the downside of life. So, you know, having a trained arborist come out and evaluate the tree is something that, that is incumbent upon you. You have to do that. And if you don't like one set of recommendations, then perhaps you have somebody else come out and give another set of recommendations. And then you can always talk to me or Vitash, and we can give you our 2 cents worth. But to do nothing might be inviting problems.
All right, Dean, well, good luck with that. It is difficult to see such a gorgeous tree decline. Let's get a few email questions in here. This one's from Gary. He has 3 questions about apples. So first question, I have 2 apple trees, probably about 40 years old. I don't know what variety they are. They were here when I bought the lot. I asked the person who planted them, and he couldn't remember. In the past, we've had bushels of red apples from those trees. Over the past 3 years, the trees look like they're dying, a few branches at a time. They only put out a dozen apples or so this year. I keep cutting back the dead branches, but more are dying every year. Next year, they may be completely dead. I don't see any specific insects or borers, but there do seem to be woodpecker holes all over the trees. What might be doing this, and is there anything that can be done to save them?
Well, those may be sapsucker holes, and they're not after insects. They're actually after the sap. So, and sapsucker damage is very distinctive. The holes are basically in a straight line, either vertical or horizontal. And normally they don't cause serious damage. But if they're seeing a lot of dead branches in the tree, and this is a trend where we're seeing additional branches dead, then that would tell me it's in an irreversible decline and probably will die within a few years. What they could try possibly is some grafting, because they don't know the variety. They don't need to know the variety if they can get some apple rootstocks and then take small branches from the current tree and do a whip or tongue graft, they can actually reproduce it.
All right. And he has some questions about apple seedlings, and he wants to give us this disclaimer first. I know that the seedling's future apple production is unpredictable, but I just wanted to grow some from seed. So here are his questions about that. I have 5 apple seedlings about 1.5 to 2 feet tall that grew from seed and planted outside last spring. Do I need to mulch or cover them to protect them from the winter?
I would make sure the rabbits don't get them. So I would put some chicken wire fencing or hardware cloth around them. The temperature should be okay, but I'd worry about the rabbits.
All right. And final question. I have 2 late sprouting apple seedlings that are only about 3 to 4 inches tall and are still in a pot in a south facing window. The leaves are still bright green. They have not yet dropped their first leaves. None of the leaves are turning brown yet. What can I expect from these?
I think I'd put them outside on these mild fall days and basically kind of force them to go dormant where they drop their leaves. But before it gets real cold, maybe put them in a cool place like an unheated garage over winter.
All right. Here's a question from Dan. Recently, some work has been done on the exterior of our church, and the crew had to prune a large oak to gain access. I know this isn't a good time to prune oaks, so is there something we should watch for as to oak wilt? And if we find it, what can we do?
I'll jump in here, Jeff, and you can add on. But if they've done it within the last couple of weeks, we had some frost and the temperatures have dropped, it's too late to put any wound dressing. And actually, there was a release from our state forest health specialist, I think within the last 2 weeks, saying it's if you need to prune oaks, it's okay. So I would say if they've done it in the last few weeks, there's not an issue. If it was something that was done, let's say, in September or something like that, then they want to watch next year, because if that tree somehow became infected, which as you get later in the summer and towards fall, the probability of that oak wilt being transmitted is very, very low. There is probability, but it's very low. So what they want to watch for next summer, usually about July, maybe into August, if they start to see some wilting or leaves starting to fall, then they may want to look at that. The problem is it's too late. I mean, if it's infected, it's infected. So all they can, you know, basically if it makes through next summer, they should be fine. I think based on the time of year, if it's been just in the last couple of weeks, they're probably going to be okay.
All right. And here's another pruning against one's wishes question. This one's from Tim in Ankeny. He says, I've run into an issue with the city of Ankeny. I got the letter from the city saying I need to trim on the sidewalk side to 8 feet off the ground and 15 feet off the ground on the street side. Since the trees in question are only about 18 feet tall, I think there's a real danger of killing the trees with such severe pruning. I've also let them know that the trees are oaks and the issue of oak wilt is serious. What can be done in this situation? And here's the question you probably can't answer is, how can I educate the city on tree maintenance? But all right, let's just take that first question. What can be done in this situation?
I'll let Jeff take this.
Oh, boy. I love the city of Ankeny. Well, Tim, you know, I think you're on solid ground here. If you were to adhere to those principles of 8 and 15-foot clearance, you're probably going to remove too much tissue at one time. Now, then my question is the tree currently offending the sidewalk in the street to this degree? So 15 feet off the street, I can't imagine your young tree is coming anywhere close to that right now. So what you could do is remove the branches or shorten them to the point where they're not over the street. But it sounds like he's already been served with a letter of reprimand. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, he said he got the letter, but no more details. That's all I've got.
Boy, we could intervene. Charity, you could intervene because your voice carries much more weight and gravitas than mine. Changing the minds of elected officials, good luck with that one.
I would suggest that he call them and just see if he could get a city official out there to look at the situation and try to explain it and try to work with them. And a lot of times we can work through those situations just by getting on the ground and looking at the situation.
And take deep breaths and stay calm.
And again, I'd love to see a picture of this. That always helps me. And maybe we could provide some guidance for both Tim and the city. And this might have legs. It could be applied over the entire city.
All right.
Kumbaya.
So email Jeff. He would like to engage city of Ankeny.
We'll come down.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Colin is on the line in Sac City. Hi, Colin.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your
question? I have a oak tree. It's probably 6 to 7 years old now, and some low branches. I need to trim them because it's awfully hard to mow, and they're too short. As it matures, they're going to have to go anyhow. What treatment in March do I put on the cut wound?
Mark, go ahead with that one.
None. If you do it at the right time, Colin, and I would be a little more conservative than Jeff. I would actually try to get that pruning done by the end of February and March 1st. We never know. Sometimes we get these warm periods and stuff like that, and bugs start flying and things start happening. So if I was to do it, I would actually try to be done by about the 1st of March when pruning that. But as long as you prune it then, there should be no need for wound dressings at all.
All right, Colin, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Janet in Waterloo. Hi, Janet.
Hi.
What's your question?
I have two questions. The first one is regarding a tulip tree that we have. It's about 2 years old. Mm. Of course, they have big leaves, and during the windstorm, the one tree that is between the house and the garage, it's beautiful. It's big leaves and nice shape. And the one that's kind of between the houses where the wind gets at it, it took the center part of the tree, just blew it off, and we trimmed it. I mean, the tree doesn't look ugly. It doesn't look like it's been topped. But I'm wondering if it's kind of the end of this tree, if because that center stem is gone, if it's going to kill the tree.
Oh, no. No, I think this might be another one of those cases where you wait and watch the tree, and many times trees will figure this out on their own. Tulip trees have a way of throwing another leader with time. You might be able to help it. So when the leaves fall off, and that should be happening pretty soon, stand back and look at the tree's architecture, and you might see a side branch that could become the leader. And you're going to favor that. You're going to reduce competition with that new leader. And with time, I think the tree will figure things out.
Do we trim branches around it to make sure that leader has all it needs to grow?
Well, this sounds like a pretty young tree. And as we've talked throughout the hour, you don't want to over-prune a plant. So I'm going to try to identify that leader I'm going to identify branches that might be crossing or competing with it, but I don't want to remove too much tissue because, remember, those leaves are providing the food for the plant, and I don't want to rob it of the necessary food that it needs when it's young and growing fast.
All right. Well, Janet, thank you for your call. Next up, we've got Joan in Des Moines. Hi, Joan.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
I had two questions. One, we have the typical backyard full of oaks, and it's very pretty, and we enjoy it. And I've made a decision to place an oak in the front yard, a red oak, and I'm starting to regret that regarding basically the maintenance. And I'm not sure if, as I age, that's something I want to take on. What are the chances that we could transplant that to the backyard?
I'll weigh in here first, Joan. How big is it?
It's been in the ground for 3 to 4 years. It's about 20 feet tall, and if I measured the diameter of the base, we're probably around 10 to 15 inches.
Yeah. Well, it can be done, but this
it's not cheap.
Do you have experience, Charity, with this?
No, I'm just guessing.
Okay. Well, you could either do it with one of the tree spades, these mechanical devices, or the technique, the artistry of digging a tree with a ball. Not many people do that anymore, but it could be done. So yeah, it could
Mark's
be done.
Mark's shaking his head here, Jeff.
he's saying no.
Well, tree spade, yes. Ball, no.
Okay. Well, I would love to try this, but
well, okay, Jeff.
Take your class
she's
down
in
there.
Des Moines. Go on down.
But getting a tree spade into your front yard and then getting it into your backyard could be the challenge. So
okay.
Right. You just don't want the leaf maintenance, the raking.
Yes, we. Yeah. The more I look at it, the more I realize maybe I enjoyed it more in the backyard than the front.
Well, and as you know, these will not be demure little trees as they get older.
No, and it's doing quite well, so yeah. I think we might just live with what we have. So thank you on that. The second question is, if you trim an oak or any other tree, and you notice that there's a hole in the limb, so it's somewhat on the base of the trunk, do you have any recommendation? Do you just let it naturally heal, or is there something we should look for?
If there's actually a hole there, especially on a larger tree, I might want to call an arborist in if they're not already working with it to look to see if there's more internal decay. That's usually an indication that there's some decay in the tree if you actually have a physical hole within that wound area. So you're going to really have to look at that to see, you know, especially with oaks, they don't need a lot of solid wood to stay fairly stable. But if you get significant decay within that tree, that could be a long-term problem. And the challenge is you cannot plug that with anything. You can't fill it. You can't cover it. Because anything you try to do, if there's decay there, it's going to continue to move out through the dead area, through the trunk of the tree anyway. So I would really, if I had something like that, I would want to get someone to take a closer look to see what my structure totally of that tree was.
All right, Joan, thanks for your call. And I'm going to ask this question even though we're going to run out of time. Kathy says, my neighbor is having 2 ash trees removed and has been advised to replant with 3 trees clustered for each of the ash trees removed. His tree person has said that this is a trend that's popular now in landscaping and beneficial for fast growth as the trees are competing for each other for space. I can see your face, Mark. You want to go first?
No, I'll let Dr. Iles. Okay. He's got more of a landscape background.
Jeff,
than
is this a trend? Is this a good idea?
I don't know about this trend, but I'm trying to bring back bell-bottom jeans. So that's a trend.
All right, so you don't want to touch this?
No.
And Mark doesn't want to touch it?
I would suggest that they don't do that.
Okay.
They look at what they want and try to plant 1 or 2 trees to fill that space back in. If they want to create a forest type situation, then yeah. If they want that kind of density, yeah. But if they want a landscape, I would look at individual trees.
Good answer.
And 2 different, not two different oaks, not 2 different locusts, 1 of each, and try to get some more diversity.
All right, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh, thank you.
Thank you.
Jeff Iles, Iowa State University professor and chair of the Hort Department, thank you.
Thank you, Charity.
And Richard Giron, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist, thank you.
You're welcome.
This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.